VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 437, recorded on September 7th, 2016. Welcome to the 437th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast on the 270th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Turk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, I just barely got home an hour ago. I've been doing a TV show, and they did not film in New York, so I had to ride all the way there and ride all the way back, so... before you ask which TV show, I can't really say. Sorry. I just did the Star Trek convention this past weekend, and I met Nana Visitor, Denise Crosby, and Sirach Lofton. And to interpret those who don't know who they are, even if they're Trek fans, I met with Kira Nerys, Tasha Yar, and Jake Sisko. So... Nana Visitor is really become a Broadway babe. She acts like a Broadway hoofer. Denise Crosby is really great, and she has a lot of things in perspective, and now she's doing Tasha Yar, and fortunately she can do it with video games because video game characters never age. And Sirach Lofton, I think, has moved on, but he has a lot of perspective. He idolizes Avery Brooks, who played his father in Deep Space Nine, played by, Benjamin Sisko. So, I also bought a game from the Star Trek convention called Star Trek Ascendancy. And it's a game which comes with three factions, but the expansion's already coming out in November. It comes with, of course, the Federation, the Romulans, and the Klingons. Two new expansions coming in November for the Cardassians and the Ferengi, and it can go up to 10 players, and there's more factions coming. And it's sort of like Twilight Imperium in that it's an hour per player, so if you're going to have 10 players in a game, you better have the weekend wrapped up.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
first of all, I'm jealous that you got to go to the Star Trek convention and meet any Star Trek actors. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Tell us more about how this game plays. Is it like an MMO or what?
It's made by the same people who did Firefly, the game. It's sort of like a tile game in some ways, in which you start from your own home planet, and you have a star base there, and it generates three types of resources. It generates production, science, and culture. And the idea of the game is to get 5 ascendancy tokens. And you go around exploring, uncovering new planets, building spaces there. And all the planets have encounters. A lot of them are from the old series, like you might meet the Organians, or you might end up on Ryza, or you might, you know. So there's a lot of backstory there. It's going to be very interesting to see what the expansions do. From what I understand, the Ferengi make these trades, which are a lot more valuable than anything else. You don't want to help them, but the money that you or the income you get from them is so fabulous that you really can't refuse. So it's like, you know. The thing about it is the board game itself, costs $100, and the reason for that is that it comes with tons and tons of miniature little starships and pieces and all that stuff. And it's fun seeing little Enterprise D's flying around the universe and little Klingon birds of prey and Romulan warbirds.
So it's a board game. You didn't specify it was a board game.
It was a board game.
I thought you were talking about a video game.
No, it's a board game.
Okay.
You also can develop technology.
Mm-hmm.
And, stuff like... and everybody has a starting technology. For example, the Romulans start with a cloaking device, which means they... When they attack, if they attack, they get to attack first before the others can respond. And all of them have their weaknesses, like the Federation cannot attack a home system. But What they can do is they can they're good at homogenizing, which means, hey, join the Federation. We're the cool guys, and they can get people to join them peacefully.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah, Sheridan wouldn't have any problem attacking Earth.
You know, I played as a Romulans and I won.
Awesome.
We played a fast game in which we all went to three ascendancies, so people are playing with really, really aggressive with each other and with me. So by the end of the game, this Earth was wiped clean except for a single Romulan warbird hovering above it. The Klingon system, Kronos, was wiped clean with a single Federation starship, and I managed to keep my my starbase with no nodes anymore, just a single starbase up when I got my third ascendancy. So it was brutal. It was really brutal.
That sounds like you had fun.
So the other game that I played is a game, and it's been out for a while. Called Star Trek Timelines, and it's basically the Game of Thrones iOS game, except with Star Trek, and you have everybody meeting each other. Like, you can have on as your crew TNG Picard, with Star Trek VI Leonard Nimoy, with the old series Spock, with the old series Spock, Tasha Yar, and the Viceroy from Star Trek Nemesis. That sort of weird crap. And you get to level him up and all that stuff. Oh, and I did meet John Delancey in the booth. I didn't speak to him much longer, but, you know. Just so you know, John Delancey and Q are the same personality.
Hmm.
They have the same exact personality. So whenever you see Q, that's basically John Delancey.
That's nice to know.
Yeah. But he's also a very nice guy. That's the other thing, too. Sirok Lofton was nice. But the Na'vi Visitor and Denise Crosby were super nice. And unlike some other people I might note, they actually love their fans. So they hung around, you know, for a while to chat with people.
That's cool.
Yeah. I was supposed to get an autograph from Kate Mulgrew. But her line was so long because she was only there for one day. William Shatner was there for the final day as well. I didn't even bother to know how many people were going to be at the thing. Keep in mind, this is all the 50th anniversary. As a matter of fact, the official 50th anniversary of Star Trek is tomorrow, or at least September 8th. So all this is, and oh yeah, buying the Star Trek Ascendancy board game, and by the way, it's not out. It's not coming out for another few weeks. Buying it at the convention, I got special 50th anniversary encounter cards that will never be released. So that was cool.
Hmm.
Now, as a convention, it wasn't that impressive in that it had one small place to buy stuff, and then you had the panels. And one of the things is that the panels were not packed at all. As a matter of fact, most of them were one-third empty, which is fine by me because I like being able to go to a panel and not have to wait 2 hours before just to get in. And the panel I really enjoyed was Fashions of Star Trek from the 60s to the 90s. That was really fun. I had to go to the panel talking about Star Trek Online, which I guess is video game news that it's coming to PS4 and Xbox One. And they're redoing everything to have better graphics, and the graphic upgrades that I saw were incredible. Don't worry, PC owners, you're going to get those as well. So if you're a Star Trek Online fan, and for those who don't know, it's free to play. So is Star Trek Timelines, and one of the things I like about Star Trek Timelines and Star Trek Online is that while they're free to play and they're microtransaction-based, you can have just as much fun never spending a penny. And, you know, sort of like Bejeweled Stars. You don't have to spend a penny, you'll still have fun. But people support it because they really enjoy themselves. Anyway, that's what I've been playing. How about you, Scott?
I've been playing my Trials of Legend of Heroes Trials in the Sky. I'm just really engrossed in the story, and I want to complete the game before getting into other games too much. But I know I still have the Nuka-Cola World DLC to play, Abduction, and the last Minecraft chapter is coming
out. Yeah, it's coming out next week.
yeah, the achievements are already up on Steam. so, you know, I gotta do that. But it's like, I'm just enjoying, again, this really engrossing story for Trials. And I don't think I've been...
Now this is Chapter 2, right?
Yeah, this is Chapter 2. Okay. And I don't think I've been this engrossed in a video game story in a while now. But it's like, you know, I've always liked story games like this. Like, back in NES days, it would be like Crystalis was my first really in-depth story game. I mean, you know, Legend of Zelda was nice, but you were mostly just dungeon crawling. With Crystalis, you had a story going on. You had characters and other people around you to develop a story and care about the world. And, you know, so, like, you know, like I said, I really want to finish this story up before I move on to another game.
Any Star Trek references in it?
No, but there was actually a Ghostbuster reference.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a chapter where there's a ghost running around, and the main character is like, I saw a ghost and I ain't afraid of no ghost.
Was it green and eating things?
No, it was not. Oh. It was you know, just spectral and, you know, white and semi-transparent.
Well, you guys know since the last.
Oh, that's right. You had to go someplace, didn't you?
I did. I was over in LA checking out the Call of Duty XP fan event. In which I got some hands-on time with Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, the zombie mode, Call of Duty Modern Warfare Remastered, and it was a good time. It was a really good time, and I wish I could go back because I had a really good time with those games.
Well, I mean, they're going to be coming out at some point.
Well, sure, but that's going to be like weeks away. no, but seriously, like... I don't know if either of you guys are Call of Duty fans, but I've played enough to know progress when I see it. It was Infinite Warfare was a very good step in the right direction in terms of mobility and all these new ways in which you could use all sorts of new tools.
You know what's funny is that people for a while were pissing on Call of Duty. And I was laughing to myself, as, yeah, you piss on it, but you know what? You're going to be buying it, and you're going to be playing it, and you're enjoying it anyway. Because people love to hate, for some reason, we're hating on Call of Duty and embracing Battlefield 1 for whatever reason. You know, it's how the fanboy mind works, you know, sometimes it's just very strange.
Yeah. And I'll tell you this, Call of Duty Modern Warfare Remastered.
Yeah, I was about to ask you about that.
It's good. It's enjoyable. It's very pretty. Like it, but when you play Infinite Warfare and then you go over to Modern Warfare Remastered, you can definitely feel like the time that has passed since Modern Warfare has been out. Everything feels quite a bit slower, and it's not a slow game. It's just a lot slower than Infinite Warfare.
You know, that reminds me of when people play Halo 2, and they still play Halo 2 on PC. You know, people were still playing. Obviously, people were still playing Halo 2 long after when Halo 4 was out. You know, it's like people just loved that style of game. And when they announced Halo 2 Remastered multiplayer, people went apeshit. You know, I mean, it wasn't the technical aspect of that wasn't what they had wanted. You know, that was full of bugs, but it was still, you know, people were still excited about that. And, you know, people are excited about Call of Duty Modern Warfare 4 Remastered. I know you want to say Modern, but it's basically remaking Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare.
Right.
Back when Modern Warfare wasn't the name of the game.
Do you have a question? Did you have a question, Scott?
It wasn't so much a question, but I just remember one particular year where they had, like, I think a screenshot of Call of Duty, Call of Duty, Battlefield, and a couple other first-person shooter games, and they said it looked all the same to them. And that's basically how I feel about most shooter games. They look all the same to me. But I'm glad to hear there's progress if you feel that there is.
I mean, here's the thing. For a long while, to me, all RTSs look the same, right? I mean, there is a time when fans who are not... or people who are not fans of the genre will see hegemony, right? Like, you know, they all look the same. I mean, everything was a Doom clone for a long while.
anyone who says that Infinite Warfare, like, you're going to get people that are going to be like, oh, Infinite Warfare is just copying off of Titanfall, or Infinite Warfare is just copying. And those are the people that you're going to be able to tell as soon as they say that. They have no idea what they're talking about.
I will say, I'm really looking forward to Titanfall 2. I mean, what I've seen of Titanfall 2 has really been good.
Oh, I've played it. I got in on that tech demo, and I really enjoyed it. But it is very, very different from Infinite Warfare. They're both pretty good in their own rights.
Well, here's the thing about Titanfall 2. I'm sorry to get off the subject, but a lot of people were saying that Titanfall 2's map felt a little bit compressed. You know, like it was smaller, quote-unquote smaller, than other maps that were in Titanfall. And I'm wondering, A, is that going to be the game as a whole, or B, is it just that map? Because I know one of the things they also wanted to do was get people to fight faster, you know? Because Titanfall, a lot of it was running to to where the action was and waiting for your Titan to come, you know?
Right.
And here it's just like, get your Titan and go!
That was something that was pointed out. I'm going to bring it back to Call of Duty. That was something that was pointed out, like, in the design these days. It's about... especially for Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, the design of the maps is built towards pushing people towards the key juncture points that much quicker to engage each other. So you have a lot of like in Infinite Warfare, you have a lot of lane map design. Like you'll have two or three lanes that push players towards each other at key points.
The only thing I have an issue with, and it's for Titanfall 2, is that one of the great parts of Titanfall 2 was getting the hell out and hopping on your ship and getting away from everything, you know, before retaliate, you know, when you lost. If the map is compressed, it's not going to feel as exciting when you just get there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless they make it so that it always your escape ship always lands between you and the victors, so that you have to fight through the victors to get away.
Yeah, and I think that the second week of the tech test definitely addressed that a bit. They released a third map in the second week called Forward Base Kodai, and that was easily the biggest of the three. It had like an enormous shell structure, and people could fight in their Titans on top of the shell while people were fighting on the ground below.
I'm still disappointed they didn't get Peter Cullen. If they're going to get someone who sounds like Optimus Prime, get Optimus Prime.
Yeah. Speaking of famous people, I got to talk about zombie mode, because I did that at Call of Duty XP as well. It was Zombies in Spaceland, which is an 80s...
Zombies in Space.
Zombies in Spaceland.
Oh, okay.
Which, it's an 80s glitz and glam scenario set in an amusement park. Oh. And you've got, like, the setup is that you've got four actors that were going to meet up with this famous horror icon, played by Paul Pee Wee Herman Reubens.
Oh, cool! Is he gonna play Amalyn from Buffy the Vampire Slayer? When you kill him, he goes ooh ah ooh ah ooh ah.
Nah, he's a famous fake horror icon, Willard Wyler.
Sort of like Peter Vincent from Fright Night, huh?
Yeah, he traps all of these actors in this haunted amusement park. And send zombies after them to create his new horror movie.
Okay.
And there's just all sorts of 80s.
How is his voice in it? Is he doing his normal voice or the Pee Wee Herman voice?
He's doing like just a very like a sinister bad guy voice. It's
okay.
Really
so like Amalyn, right?
Yeah. And you've got all sorts of stuff in there. There were like guns that looked like Nintendo zappers. There was. 80s glam rock. David Hasselhoff plays a character in there. He plays a DJ that helps the characters out.
So it's sort of...
This isn't a movie. It's the new zombie mode for Call of Duty Infinite Warfare.
Right. Oh, okay, cool.
So what I'm thinking is, it's sort of, you know... you know, Far Cry's Blood Dragon mode, you know, that just started something, didn't it?
It did. It really did. There's just so much referendum these days, and I enjoy it because I like that era.
You know, we're going to have to get into 90s stuff soon enough, though, referring that. And there's plenty to make fun of for the 90s.
Absolutely.
Because everything is no longer super. It's now extreme!
Heck, I'm sure Corey Feldman needs work. Call him up.
Oh, Corey Feldman's doing something new. He's actually doing a role that makes fun of himself. Hold on one second. He's doing a new movie. Anyway, oh god, no! I'm looking at news and apparently he claims he contacted Corey Haim through a medium.
Oh no.
Remember the Corys. Oh, that's right. He's appearing with Ron Jeremy in a film.
Lost Boys.
Yeah. I missed. That was a good movie.
Yeah, it was.
Paul Schumacher. Probably the last Paul Schumacher film you loved.
He's doing Corbin Nash. You think that's it?
No. It's a movie. It's going to be sort of like The Goonies. But anyways. What else? There was something I wanted to ask you, and now I completely lost it.
Oh, it looks like he's been busy. He was doing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 2013 to 2016, and Nachos con Plantino, never heard of that. Job started.
Are you looking at his IMDb page?
Yeah.
Okay.
that's how you find out this information. So he's been working. Because you couldn't remember the movie, so I looked it up for you.
Anyways. He's doing Saturday Night Slaughter, which is an anthology horror film. So, yeah, he's being very over the top lately with his stuff. Uh-huh. Anyway, you did the Call of Duty thing. Did you play anything that's not Call of Duty since?
I've been working on one that's coming out pretty soon. It's called Jotun. It's been out on computer.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, it's been out on PC, but it's called Jotun, and it's a Norse-inspired hack and slash. Oh, I wouldn't even say it's hack and slash. It's more like puzzle than hack and slash, but it's like a top-down Nordic adventure game.
Yeah. Awesome.
Where you go into you're basically a Viking woman that died dishonorably. And she has to fight against these massive Jotun, which are like giant guardians, with the help of the gods.
That sounds so friggin' metal, doesn't it? It sounds like it should have a death metal soundtrack.
There is a death metal Viking game. I saw it on GOG. It's like a side-scrolling one, and they have metal music playing while you're slaughtering stuff. But this is a different game, it looks like, too.
Yeah. Jotun is very stylized. I love the art, and it's very lush. Like, the monsters are enormous and freaking beautiful.
Yeah, they're beautiful. They're
beautifully ugly.
This looks like a fun game.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. My only complaint about it is that you do, like, in between the boss fights, it's all puzzle. Like, there isn't too much fighting in between. It's just all puzzle, which is okay, but I also wish there was a little bit more going on in between the boss fights.
Oh, wow, this does look cool.
So, anyways, today a lot of stuff happened, and this is why I moved everything to Wednesdays, because a lot of stuff happened today, in fact. And some major news. So we're going to start with the first one. iPhone 7 and 7 Plus announced with water-resistant dual cameras and no headphone jack. And this comes to us from The Verge. Now, keep in mind, this was leaked actually a couple of hours before they had actually announced it. So Apple has officially announced their new iPhones. It features a design that's very similar to last year's iPhone S, 6S. With a rounded aluminum body, but what's entirely new is the phone's water resistance, which means you can get the iPhone 7 or larger iPhone 7 Plus wet without any worry. Question, wait, it'll rain, you had to worry? Really? Those of you who have iPhones, let us know. Also new is the long-rumored dual camera system, stereo speakers, and a darker black color scheme. As expected, the iPhone 7 does not have a headphone jack, rendering countless 3.5mm headphones useless with the device or requiring the use of an adapter. Excuse me. The new phone may look very similar to last year's models, but instead of the matte metal finish we've come used to, it has a glossy mirror design. The new color is called Jet Black and is much darker and richer than the normal black that's been used in years past. Apple is also releasing a standard black model along with gold, silver, and rose gold. Apple has redesigned the iconic home button for iPhone 7, making it force-sensitive, just like Anakin Skywalker, and just like the Force Touch trackpads and recent MacBook laptops. The phone also has gained the Taptic Engine haptic feedback system from the Apple Watch, which provides different vibration feedback for various alerts. The new phones have upgraded displays that are 25% brighter with a wider color gamut for better color reproduction and improved color management, in other words, HDR. Both include the 3D touch pressure sensitive display that debuted with the 6S, but it appears that Apple did not update the image resolution, and this might be a sticking point for a lot of people. The iPhone 7 is only 750 by 1334, and the iPhone 7 Plus is only 1080 by 1920. As has been rumored all year, the iPhone does not have a standard 35mm headphone jack, and its place is a second speaker, giving the phone a stereo sound and an adapter that comes in the box that allows you to use the 3.5mm headphones with the device. In addition, Apple has developed a new set of wireless headphones called AirPods, which are designed to work with the iPhone 7. The AirPods are truly wireless without a cable connecting to the left and right headphone. Apple has Apple developed a new wireless technology that handles both audio and the wireless connection to the phone or Apple Watch. They have sensors to detect when they're in your ears and motion accelerometers to activate Siri, which is, to me, a horrible idea because I'm going to tell you something. Every time on my Android, this stupid S voice pops up, and I have it disabled. It makes me want to smash the phone against the ground. I do not like it, voice-activated stuff for that. I never use that. I may use the Kinect voice on my Xbox, but that's because it doesn't interrupt me, you know? Anyway, the Apple says that the AirPods have 5 hours of battery life and comes with a battery case that provides 25 hours of use. The AirPods will be available in late October for $169. They also have Beats headphones coming out as well. The iPhone 7 also comes with a new A10 Fusion processor that's said to be 40% faster than last year's chip. It is paired with the new graphics processing chip, so that's 50% faster than what's in the A9. I think that's what most of us would care about at this point. As for price, the iPhone 7 starts at $650 for 32GB. And can go up to 256 gigabytes for $850. The larger iPhone 7 Plus is more expensive, starting at $770 for the 32GB and up to $970 for the top model with 256GB. So the new iPhone 7 is out. Opinions, please.
Fuck you, Apple. $169 for your fucking wireless AirPod headphones? Fuck you.
Well, keep in mind, they did include the adapter for regular, so if you just want to get a gummy for $5, you can still use that. It'll probably be kind of awkward, though, I would imagine. Because what it'll do is it has to stick into the power socket, you know, the lightning socket.
I was trying to buy a new computer. Fuck you, Apple. Sorry. Go ahead, TJ. I'm sorry.
Who in the world has ever thought, man, I hate having the convenience of being able to listen to music and charge my phone at the same time?
Okay, so here's the thing. Now, one thing that we have to acknowledge is that Bluetooth is very – it's already saturated the planet. So if you want to get a Bluetooth headset, there's your answer to charging and listening at the same time.
I'm looking at this price. The iPhone 7, 32 gigs, is $600. I could buy a computer for that much.
Yeah.
I just, no.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess. I would not buy AirPods, though. I mean, who cares?
I could buy several just standalone music players. That's what I want to do because, like, I'm sick of trying to listen to music and a call comes in or I get a push notification because of an update on something.
Well, there is the iPod Touch. I mean, that's the thing they did not mention and I'm pretty sure exists. Mm-hmm. There'll probably be an iPod Touch version of this.
Yeah.
But the thing with me and the iPod Touch is that I have an iPad, so why get an iPod Touch anymore?
I find it interesting that apparently the other, I spilled water on my phone today, and I'm curious if if it's going to fry here in a bit, and I'm going to be looking for an iPhone 7.
And the thing is that you don't really spend $900. Basically, you spend $1,800, spending $30 a month, whatever carrier you decide to use with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah, that's true. I do the lease thing with my iPhone. It's not that big of a deal.
But related to this news is that Nintendo may have upstaged Apple. Go ahead, TJ.
Nintendo steals Apple show with game announcements from USA Today. The breakthrough winner from the iPhone maker's big reveal Wednesday, or well, today, was video game maker Nintendo. Shares of Nintendo's U.S. listed Shares of U.S. Nintendo's listed
stock. Just say Nintendo's U.S. listed shares.
Nintendo's U.S. listed shares jumped 29% to $36.32 a piece Wednesday after gaming pioneers said the Apple during the Apple conference it would bring several titles to Apple's various mobile platforms. Nintendo plans to release a version of its co-owned Pokemon Go augmented reality game to the Apple Watch and an Endless Runner style game using Mario Brothers characters to the iPhone called Super Mario Run. Contrast Nintendo's stock's big jump with the barely noticeable 68-cent or 0.6% rise in Apple's own shares to $108.38 after the meeting. People see this announcement as a signal that Nintendo is all in with mobile, says Michael Pachter, analyst at Wedbush Securities.
We've been talking about this for the past year or so, about Nintendo, you know, embracing mobile. And, you know, I'm pretty sure Super Mario Run is going to be like every other runner, like the Pac-Man runner and the Sonic runner. But, yeah. You know, what happens when Nintendo releases a Zelda game on mobile?
Yeah. It'll be interesting. And they've already, immediately following their announcement of the Super Mario Run game, they also announced that they had plans in the works for Animal Crossing and Fire Emblem titles that are confirmed.
Oh dear God! They can print money with those titles on mobile, especially Animal Crossing. They could print money with Animal Crossing. I mean, you know, and here's the one thing about mobile is that, you know, you can update it constantly. You know, so people won't get bored with, and also I wonder if there's going to be a social networking. Imagine if they have social networking for Animal Crossing.
Yeah. I hope they develop Animal Crossing right, because that would be fun to play with, like, all sorts of friends all over the place.
I'm willing to bet you, Scott, that you'll have people who just log on to go fishing with each other and just chat while they fish. That's what they did in World of Warcraft, too.
People will eat up Fire Emblem as well, because mobile is a perfect place for a game like that, where it's just like that grid-based strategy game.
I'm just not interested in that Super Mario Run, because the level I hated the most in every Mario game was the quote-unquote run level, where it's automatically scrolling and forcing you to go. That always annoyed and irritated me and added pressure.
So here's the thing, though. With the Endless Runner games of the style that it's probably going to be, they're a lot more forgiving. And it's less about surviving and more about maximizing.
Mm-hmm. It is surviving.
It's almost impossible to die. You don't die in the Endless Runners. Basically, you run out of time. You run out of time.
And some of them you do. There's also some, like, pitfall where, like, you go as long as you can without dying.
Okay, but I'm thinking about the licensed ones, like the Pac-Man one and the Sonic one and all that stuff. Those games, basically, you run and you unlock new characters who have different powers, you know, that sort of thing.
I guess it'll be better than Flappy, at least.
Also, keep in mind, these Endless Runners, Scott, are all free-to-play. So you could just check it out for yourself without having to spend it. And if you don't like it, you just delete it, you know.
That's good. Yeah. That's good, at least.
You know what I'd like to discuss, since we're on mobile right now? And I'm pretty sure Scott... I don't know if Scott plays it, but the new Fallout Shelter stuff.
Yeah.
And the thing is that I might get back into that, because they've been adding a lot of stuff. And they've also had a Nuka World... I don't even know if that's still going on Fallout Shelter. The Nuka World thing, in which You find two new characters, and basically they just every so often they pop up and they give you free Nuka, Quantum, and Caps. You know, they just appear. Have you played Fallout Shelter, Scott?
I haven't played Shelter, but my wife has, and she enjoyed it. I think. I don't know if she's played it recently. I don't think so. But
they've turned it into a real game now. It's no longer just a Fallout management. Now your guys go out on quests.
Yeah, I heard about that.
So I'm going to be checking that out, you know, just because the thing is, I got bored with Fallout Shelter, you know, because my vault was running perfectly, and I had people going out for 2 days and coming back and getting nice stuff. And the thing is that now that there's more to the game, I may investigate it again.
Yeah, I have that same issue. I played it when it first came out, and I played it for probably the first month through a few of the updates. And it was fun for a while, but after a while you get everything and you're just bored because everything is just working perfectly, and the only thing you go in there for is just to collect all your resources.
Yeah. Or to get achievements, and I already got almost all of those. So, yeah, I mean, last word on Nintendo's embracing mobile even more now. I mean, let me ask you a question. What IP, aside from Zelda, do you hope Nintendo brings to mobile platforms?
Kid Icarus.
That would be fun.
I'm not holding my hand. Oh, Contra. Oh, do they not have that anymore?
That's not theirs. That belongs to Konami. Konami owns Contra.
Freaking A.
Let's see, how about... So many, well, there's Pikmin.
I feel like doing a Princess Leia line. The tighter your grip holds, the more licenses slip through your fingers, Nintendo.
How about Pikmin? What do you think of Pikmin?
I don't care about Pikmin.
But other people might.
Okay.
I would play Ice Climbers and Balloon Fight if they decided to mess with those.
Okay.
Plus, Balloon Fight would be perfect. Balloon Fight would be a fun just little screw around for a little bit game for a mobile.
That's true. The games that you're not going to see are probably stuff like Smash and all that stuff, because that's too much of a cow. Too big of a cash cow in the 3DS, and I think that's the only thing that's going to prevent Zelda from appearing from mobile, because it's such a cash cow on 3DS. But my response would be, well, if you're gonna, why not just remake one of your old games like Majora's Mask or out of the Link to the Past? You know, I mean, you milk those things for whatever they're worth. You might as well milk it even more on mobile.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I think anyway. I'd like to see them come up with new IPs, but you know, that's been a long problem with Nintendo.
Well, you never know. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
All right. Hold on.
Holding.
Sony unveils new PlayStation 4 Pro. This from the Wall Street Journal. Sony, on Wednesday, laid out its roadmap for PlayStation 4 video game console, including plans to release a more powerful version of the top-selling machine this fall, well ahead of new machines expected from rivals next year. The new high-end model, previously codenamed Neo and now called PlayStation 4 Pro, will cost $399 and come out in November 10th.
Wow, $399? That's incredibly cheap. That's even less than a Big Mac.
It will have a faster processor and more storage and enhanced graphics for 4K resolution games and video, Sony said in presentation at the PlayStation Theater in New York Times Square. Sony also unveiled a 30% smaller, more energy-efficient PlayStation 4, slated to go on sale September 15th for $299. The slimmer console replaces the original fourth-generation PlayStation machine, which made its debut in November 13th at $399. All versions of the PlayStation 4 will be capable of handling high dynamic range imaging, or HDR, Sony said. Older machines will gain the ability through an online update.
Which is bullshit, Microsoft, by the way, and I'll explain why that's bullshit.
Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo are releasing pricey new hardware more frequently to keep pace with fast-changing technology. They also face a growing array of rivals, including high-end personal computers, sophisticated smartphones, and set-top boxes that they can play games.
So, Sony says that they're going to have older machines doing HDR. The problem with that is they're not changing the hardware. So what happens is they'll be able to do it. They'll just be able to do it very slowly. You know, mm-hmm. There's a reason why HDR is HDR. It's not because, you know, you have to unlock it on your current console. You know, there's a reason why Deus Ex Mankind Divided on my PC is so slow, because it's not able to handle it. So yeah, that's complete and utter bullshit by Sony. That's marketing speak, which is meaningless. You know, so first they come up with a PlayStation 4 Pro, which is basically a machine that's going to be running their PlayStation VR. That's all it's really intended to do. That's why it does the 4K resolution, and it has a faster processor, because the PlayStation 4, as it is right now, the VR games will work like shit. That's basically the problem there. And also, I find it amusing that Sony decided to release the PlayStation 4S. I don't know if it's a Me Too-ism or not. You know, or if they saw what the Xbox One S at E3 and said, oh, Microsoft has a good idea. And it is a good idea, by the way. They don't really slimline machines, but they also boosted the processor in the PlayStation 4, the new PlayStation 4, what do they call it again? They didn't call it anything. They just called it. So what happens is that, it isn't the boosting profits. It's that they're not just making a PS4 Slim, right? Because in the past, what did they do? They would just make a smaller version of the same console. Here they're doing what Microsoft did and releasing a slimline version of the console, but also making it a little more powerful. Because the thing is, if you play an Xbox One game on the Xbox One S, it runs a lot better across the board. The frame rates are up, the colors are better, and all that stuff, right? So they're doing the same thing with the PlayStation 4 Slim. Let's call it the Slim, because they didn't give it a name. And what I'm seeing is we're seeing a trend here. We're not really seeing iterations of new hardware anymore. It's not like going from the PS2 to the PS3 or the Xbox to the Xbox 360. Now it's going from the Xbox One to an Xbox One 2 to an Xbox One 3. All these systems from now on, I'm willing to bet you that an Xbox One in 2023 is going to be able to run Xbox One games from 2013. You know? Yeah. It may be a new hardware, it may have more, but it's also going to be the same machine, just faster. You know? I think what we're seeing here is that hardware manufacturers saying, you know, it's getting to be a real big pain to change the machines. And, oh, look, people really do like backwards compatibility. You know? Microsoft decided to make the Xbox One backwards compatible, at least partway with all their games. It's like everybody said, yes! And people bought the shit out of Red Dead Redemption, a game that came out when? 2009?
Yeah.
So, yeah, backwards compatibility is something that people want, you know? And if this trend continues, the games I bought on the Xbox One now will be available on the next iteration of the machine, say, 3 generations from now, hopefully.
Yeah. I had heard a few things about the Slim from people that had tried it out. One of the biggest things about it is that it runs completely silent.
Yeah.
Like
because the PS4 was loud,
even louder than the Xbox. It still is, but
is loud. I'm just saying it's loud.
Yeah, and that'll be nice. Plus, it's like it's almost like it's about half the size of a regular PS4 system.
Yeah, just like the Xbox One S is the half the size of the. I mean, the thing is that sorry. A lot of the same components are miniaturized and get cooler as you go from iteration to iteration to iteration. That's why you have slimline models halfway through a console's life cycle.
Mm-hmm. And, if I in a perfect world where I had money in my pocket burning, I would buy this thing and I would take it on trips with me when I went to hotels and stuff like that, because it would be easy to carry around. It's got a lot of portability to it. The only thing I'm concerned, I've heard a lot of people concerned about, it doesn't have an optical drive. Which means...
So only digital games.
Well, yeah, I mean, the problem with that is that people who already have games on disc are going to go, what? You know, so there's no impetus for those people to upgrade their machine. On the Xbox One S, they say, sure, why not, if they want to, you know. Try it in my own machine, I'll get faster games on my disc, you know. I mean, like I said, I'm wondering if, like, two generations from now, there won't be any optical disc drives and any consoles. If you want your movies, just go to Netflix. If you want your games, just download them from the store, and we'll have a 500 terabyte drive or something like that to save it all. And even then, just delete the game off your hard drive and then reinstall it when you want it.
As for the PS4 Pro, you can.
But I find it ironic that this was the entire thing that Sony was mocking Microsoft for back at E3 2013.
Yeah, my entire opinion on the PS4 Pro is, you want to know exactly like how they're, I wouldn't say floundering, but certainly trying their best here. But it's really, you can tell that it's like not exactly. There was a lot of tech speak in that and very little practicality. They were talking all about 4K, talking all about colors and HDR and all that stuff, but, like, who are they selling this to? Who is supposed to be excited about this? 4K television sellers.
One of the things you have to understand is that this coming Christmas, there's going to be a lot of discounted 4K televisions.
Yeah.
So.
But, like, in the past you had, like... You had, like, when you hear about the Xbox One or the PS4 or the PS3 or Xbox 360, you hear about practicality. Like, how cool is this? Look at what we can do with this. And this time around, it was just like tech speak. And, like.
Well, what they needed to say was 6 teraflops. That didn't happen. I understand what you're saying is that, yeah, it's okay to have tech speak, but make sure it's like wow stuff.
Yeah, and I'm on the fence about whether or not I'll get this yet. If I have the money to get a 4K TV, then maybe.
Well, there's the thing is that, you know, you have to find out what GameStop's doing with trade-ins.
Yeah, that's true. But the other thing I've heard is that, and this isn't entirely a big thing, but if I end up getting a 4K TV and I end up getting a 4K system, I would like to watch 4K movies, and the PS4 Pro doesn't support 4K Blu-ray.
Well, you can do 4K YouTube and 4K Netflix.
Yeah, I like having physical copies of movies. And you can stream a lot and do digital. It's a bummer that, like, for how much emphasis they put on 4K with this one, that the machine would not support 4K Blu-ray.
Scott?
Sorry, my wife is vacuuming. I can't talk right now.
Oh, okay. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. And this is something that was promised at E3 this past June. Xbox Live Clubs and LFG... I did that right, yeah. Arrived for Xbox One preview members, and this comes to us from The Verge. And by the way, I'm a preview member, and I didn't know this has happened, so I'm going to have to check this out as soon as we stop this podcast. Microsoft is starting to preview its upcoming October Xbox One update today. While the summer update was primarily focused on bringing Universal Apps and Cortana to Xbox One... The October update includes some highly requested gaming features. Xbox One Live Clubs and Looking for Group are both entering testing today, allowing Xbox One preview members to create clubs and start finding Xbox Live members to play multiplayer games with. And by the way, from now on, I'm not going to say clubs. I'm going to say clans, because that's what they really mean. Clans are designed to be created by anyone on Xbox Live, and you can create a unique names for these groups, just like a gamer tag is unique. They're effectively Microsoft's version of clans, obviously, and they make creating parties, sharing game clips, and chatting a lot easier for groups of friends of people interested in the same game. Microsoft is rolling out the club functionality across the Xbox One initially, and Xbox apps for Windows 10, iOS, and Android soon. Alongside clubs, Microsoft is creating its own LFG service. Most games that involve a multiplayer element usually have a community-driven LFG sites that are designed for gamers to find random players to help complete quests, raids, or strikes with, or just play competitive PvP. Just like any LFG group site, Xbox LFG will allow you to create a post with certain requirements like game mode, skill level, gear, and character types. as Microsoft is hosting things, it makes creating a party a lot easier on both Xbox One and PC. Microsoft is also creating Arena on Xbox Live, an online tournaments platform. Clans and LFG are both available this week, but Arena should arrive in preview in the coming weeks. While Xbox One owners await Arena, Microsoft is also tweaking the GamerScore leaderboard to make it more reliable and faster. It'll reset every 30 days now to keep the leaderboard competitive among friends. You'll also be able to comment with emojis, yay, using the Windows 10 set of emojis. So, LFG and Clans on the Xbox One.
Yeah.
I mean, you just came from one big clan party with the Call of Duty Elite thing.
That, and I've been in plenty of tournaments where they use, like, some third-party application to get your gamer tag or your PlayStation Network ID. And it always seems like just, like, a big-ass hassle to get everything done and into place, whereas this sounds like a much more streamlined system, which will make a lot of good, like, from everything from just getting together with friends all the way up to esports on that kind of, on that console. It'll streamline that to a great degree.
You know where this is most important, though, and I wish they would get along with it? MMOs. MMOs are the ones that desperately need LFG and calling people for raids and instances and all that stuff. And you know what? If the Xbox One or the PlayStation 4 become powerful enough to play World of Warcraft, they should just bring World of Warcraft.
I hope this is also good for Minecraft as well, because I have a few people that are on Xbox Minecraft, and we could play with them while we're on the PC and they're on the Xbox.
Yeah. Go on, Scott. TJ.
Yeah, it's always quite a hassle with a lot of these different, with all of everyone has their own little app to do this, but they're all disjointed and work to varying degrees. If there was one that was just made for the console that worked very well, like even PlayStation's community, options, like getting together a party and group chat is fairly easy up until you have a game that messes with that. Like Overwatch during the beta would not let you communicate in your party when you were playing the game.
But wait, if you were in the same party and when you were doing party chat, Overwatch would say, no, you can't do that. Is that what
you said? Yeah, you had to specifically move into Overwatch's game chat. You couldn't do, like, party chat during the beta. And I think they fixed that. But Titanfall 2 had a similar thing where the in-game chat messed with party chat. And it would be nice to just get something that was, like, an overall working thing that worked across the entire console on every game.
You know, it'd be nice, actually, if you also included something like clan radio, in which not just music, you know, but I mean sort of like announcements from clan leaders across everybody's thing. It's like, whatever they're playing, a clan leader would make an announcement or come through your game. Oh, by the way, da-da-da-da-da, you know, some vocals, some sort of clan radio sort of thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have that with. I know they have it on PC and Valve games. So, anyway, we do have listener feedback. Take it away, Scott.
Okay. This is from Donovan. The World of Warcraft community can be harsh. If you don't know what you're doing, which is one reason why I haven't played it for years now. Same here. It requires specific. It requires specific actions for certain events during raids, for example. Like, for example, you have to hit a gong with five players all at the same time, and oh my god, that took like 30 minutes to do because we weren't all on voice chat, as he explains. And you are often required to watch videos beforehand and have voice chat for choreography among your guild. Another reason for my absence from World of Warcraft is addition of unprecedented contact requiring time to learn functions, and it can take away from the core gameplay, in my opinion. A lot of people like vanilla World of Warcraft, which is, I think what he's saying, like single player mode, which is what I played, and that was the only part that I wanted to play, and then I got tired of that. While all first-person shooter games are point-and-click based, Counter-Strike, for example, requires strategies for map positions and exit pubs. I recall trying to run around maps not obeying orders back when I was a clan guild while the leader was barking at me. I'm anticipating Doom's plain deathmatch mode, unlike team deathmatch, so that I can be solo, but we won't, but we don't know when it'll be released.
Yeah, I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about, Donovan. World of Warcraft, half the reason I don't want to play it is because most of my friends have told me it's like an orchestra, and everyone has their instrument to play, and you better damn well know how to play that instrument. League of Legends is the same, and another shooter that's like that, I've talked about it on here, is Rainbow Six Siege. Everybody has a part to play, and it's not just shooting people, although that's a huge part of it. But if you don't play your role, then the team dies and people blame you.
So, but the thing is that it seems to me, and from what I've heard from your talking, that Rainbow Six Siege at least is a little more organized in terms of letting you know what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, because you pick your role. I mean, you buy your dude, and you play that role until you have it figured out. And it's not like World of Warcraft, where like you have a lot of button presses. You're still basically shooting people in the face. You just have something else, like having to put down like a certain type of shield, or trying to locate people on cameras.
You know what's really sad is that Brink didn't make it as big as it should have. I mean, it still has some popularity on PC, but in consoles it bombed. But the thing about Brink was that it would tell you things that you could do to help your team, like, and tell you where to go and how to do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that never panned out. You know, it should be implemented in some games. Can you imagine Titanfall, in which you're instructed, hey, listen, if you want, you'll get XP if you go help your team in this way, you know, and that sort of thing. Anyway, that's just a wish, and I wish Brink had been more bigger than it was.
You and me both.
So anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy feedback, leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast, and send your comments to fans at GamingPodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
And I am at Al Bouchard.
So, big day. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what the aftermath is, like a week from now or 2 weeks from now.
Absolutely. Sony's made the play. We'll see how Microsoft responds.
Well, Microsoft responds by saying, oh, remember Scorpio coming down the line. I wonder what they're going to call Scorpio. You know, it would be great if they called the Xbox One Scorpio. Just leave the name as is, you know.
They should do cool names like that. That would be fun.
Imagine if they called what was it? What was the dolphin? The Wii or the N64?
No, the Wii was the Revolution.
And everybody wanted it to be called the Revolution, by the way. I remember. People said the Revolution is a good name for a console.
I hope just to mess with Sony, they come out with something called the Xbox Filthy Casual.
Microsoft comes out with a gay station too, or something like that.
Oh,
you know, something like that. Then you get into a real big pissing match. See, the thing is that while Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo are in competition, they're also in cooperation, because it's within everybody's best interest to keep interest in console systems alive. You know.
That's.
So. Yeah, I mean, see us next week, and hopefully awesome. The big part of the year is coming, you know, when all the big releases are coming.
Yep.
So actually, that's going to be the question of the week. What is the big release coming this year, this holiday season, that you're really looking forward to?
Well, for me, it'd be Civ 6.
Dishonored 2 all the way, baby.
Which one? I didn't hear it.
Dishonored 2.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that's coming out this year. As for me, Titanfall 2, although, you know, they keep on talking about it maybe being delayed, so we'll see. We'll see, folks. I mean, Deus Ex turned out to be a game I can't play, so I can't even say I was disappointed. Unless I get it on console, and I'm not going to spend another $60 for it.
Yeah.
Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care.
And that's that. Bye-bye. Ugh.